We kind of finished Birkas HaTorah. I'm going to go into Birkas HaKohanim. But before I do that, thanks to Dvora Eisenbach, I got a chance to read Rav Shimshon Pinchas. And he wrote something beautiful on Birkas HaTorah that I want to add for the last class, okay? If you don't mind. But it kind of weaves into everything, so. From his Tefillah book. So he said that, really Torah was in Shemayim, right? And at Matan Torah, Hashem basically took it down from Shemayim. He broke, or he the fences, anything that was taking the Torah in Shemayim, and he really brought it down into this world. He said, "Kodesh Baruch Hu kachat haTorah mi Hashemayim, v'nicha al Har Sinai." And what is this? He goes on to say, "What is this?" He brought it onto Har Sinai. And we talked about this a little bit in the last class. So he brings down, Chazal says, Shlomo Melech, in Shir Shirim, in Perak Aleph, he says, Yashkeni minishikot pihu. And this is really Matan Torah. That this is Shlomo Melech's reference. We heard this to Matan Torah. And it says, he kissed me from the kisses of his lips. This is Shir Shirim. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it was such an act of love, and it had to be expressed in terms of kisses. But the Kodesh Baruch Hu brought the Torah against the wishes of the angels and everybody else, and he gave us, our Mishpacha, Klal Yisrael, the Torah. Oh. Yashkeni minishikot pihu. From his mouth. He kissed me. He kissed me with his kisses from his mouth, from his lips. Now the interesting thing is that it was a complete act of love. And the interesting thing he brings down also is that Lashon Rabim. It doesn't say a Rabim, it's plural. It doesn't say a kiss. It says Menishikot. So what are these? Pinchas goes on to explain that they're the first two Dibros that were given. That were the ones that were given, the ones that he spoke. Anoche Hashem Elokecha is the first kiss, if you will. And Lo Yelecha Elokim Acherim is the second kiss. Okay, so we can to say that the ikar is that the neshika, the kiss, came from the side of Hashem. It was initiated from a Kaddish Baruch Hu and brought down to us. Why? We can't, for us to come to love Kaddish Baruch Hu is an enormous amount of work. We have to start with Yer Shemayim, which really is a lower, Lo Yelecha Elokim Acherim. And then we can come to love with Anokhi Hashem. But the truth is, for us, it's very hard to do that. That's why Kaddish Baruch Hu brought it down to us, and he kissed us. We did nothing to deserve this. It was totally an act of love, and it was totally siyata d'shmaya. Because any Torah that we receive is really an act of love. It's completely siyata d'shmaya. And Torah is the inner source or closeness of clinging to Kaddish Baruch Hu. Because this is, as we said in the last class a lot, this is his chachma, this is his love, this is the source of his infiniteness, the source of what who the Kaddish Baruch Hu, quote-unquote, is being brought down to us through Torah. Okay? It's us receiving a relationship and being able to know what our life is for, to make relations with Kaddish Baruch Hu, to receive his love, to give love to him, to know his will. That's what Torah is. It's a relationship with the Kaddish Baruch Hu. And that we talked about in the last part. But I just wanted to give this over because it's so, I think it emphasized or kind of makes the conclusion what we talked about. And as I said, he goes on to say that in the critical place of Simcha, because this is where Hashem gave us a way to be close to him, he gave us more than he gave angels, he gave it to no other nation. In fact, they can't really learn Torah, real Torah. And it was a pure gift of love to the nation as a whole and each individual. The Nishikot were to each individual. So I just wanted to give that over before I started for Kasa Kohani. Okay? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Really beautiful. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this one. No? Come again? You can leave. No? Okay, we'll talk about it later. We'll discuss it later. Okay, so I want to begin with Birkat Kohanim. And the interesting thing, and we say right after Birkat HaTorah, there's a Tosafot in Gemara Brachos that says that immediately after Birkat HaTorah, we learn from Mikra, Mishnah, and Gemara. Okay, Mikra is written Torah, and then Mishnah and Gemara. And even though the bracha is for the entire day of learning Torah, the application of the bracha, as we know, needs to rest on a mitzvah immediately. So that's why we immediately say certain psukim. We immediately do Talmud Torah, immediately say certain psukim, or it can become a bracha levatala. Now, interesting.
A woman has to be conscious
of that where it says it. You do it automatically. It's automatically there. This is Birkat Kohanim. It's the first, and then it was Varim. Okay, so we're just doing Birkat. They give a Recha HaHashav Yishma Recha, that part. And that, but there's three parts. So the three parts are. Yeah. So the Talmid of Rabbeinu Yonah. It says that the Birkat HaTorah, as we said, is three parts. And they relate to the three parts of the what we're supposed to, the Mikra, Mishnah, and Gemara. So, Lasopa Divrei Torah, which is the first bracha, is related to Mikra, which is written, that's Birkat HaKohanim. The Kohanim use this as their bracha. The second bracha in Birkat HaTorah is Ha'erev Na until Hamalamei Torah La'amo Yisrael. And that's Mishnah. And that relates to Eilud Rim She'en Lehem Shiur. And the third is the last bracha of Netena Torah, which relates to Gemara, Eilud Rim She'ochel Prusehem. The last Eilud Rim She'ochel Prusehem. We're going to go into those later, not in this year.
Do you now have to say the Mishnah?
I don't know. I don't know. You can ask. Okay. So the interesting thing when we learned in the beginning about the Beit HaMikdash, right, in the process of moving, so we left the Eretz Yisrael, right, the courtyard of Yisrael, and we moved in, now we're moving into the Chatzer of the Kohanim, the Eretz Kohanim. And right there, as you saw in that picture, were the three steps up. That's the Dukhan, the place, or the platform of the Kohanim. It says the Kohanim stood on the three steps. Okay, that's how they left Klai Yisrael, who was standing right in front of them, making our way up. The Tosafot Yom Tov says that Birkat HaKohanim was set on these three steps, and it's related to also the three Birkat HaTorah, the three portions of the Torah that we read, and the Kohanim is also broken down into three, the Birkat HaKohanim. So this whole relationship of threes, okay, is being put together here. Now I'll go through the three of the Birkat HaKohanim. Just want to give you an explanation of why we do and what we do. So there's a Medrash in Bamidbar Rabbah that says that the first part of the bracha, Yivarechacha Hashem v'yishmarecha, Hashem should bless you and protect you. This refers to physical, material well-being. This is the physical part. And Spartan says, "Rechach Hashem ba'osher ba'banim, yishmerecha min ha'halistim." May Hashem bless you with riches and with children, and protect you from really thieves, people that will steal from you or take from you. That's the basic bottom line shot of the bracha. Okay, it's a material bracha. The next part says, "Ya'er Hashem panav alecha yichunecha," right, which means, may Hashem enlighten His face towards you and give you chayin. Give to you chayin. Chayin is a very difficult word to explain. It means like favor. Favor. But Rav Shimshon Rafael Hirsch says chayin, yichunecha, is really a spiritual gift more than a physical gift. And it's something that really, it says, ata chonen la'adam da'at, that the real source of this chayin is a spiritual knowledge, spiritual understanding of the world. You bestow knowledge to man as a gift. And Rav Shimshon Rafael Hirsch brings out a lot of different psukim, a lot of different places, to show how this gift is really Torah. Yifunecha, the act of Hashem turning his face to look at you and give you chayin, is Hashem is turning his face towards you, making a relationship with you, and his way of relating, as we said, from Rav Pinchas and all the last year, the relationship comes through Torah. That is the way that we know Hashem and have a relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. And he says that, Kibor Panecha, Natatanona Torah Chaim, that's said in the Shemona Esrei, the same concept. The light of your countenance, your face, you granted us the Torah of life. Same thing in Nishikot Pihu. It's a kiss to your face, coming at you. The kiss is the kiss of Torah. So our whole way, as we discussed in the last class, of relating to Kadosh Baruch Hu is through, mainly through Torah. It's his way of coming close to us. So giving us the knowledge is the greatest gift he can give us. It also says in Ahava Rabba, before the Shema, it says, Ve'erinenu b'Torah Secha. Lift up our eyes to Torah, to your Torah. We're asking the same idea. It's a tefillah for understanding, for Torah to become like a gift to us. Like we're asking that you should give us as a gift this Torah, which we said in the beginning, it was purely a love, purely a gift from a Kadosh Baruch Hu. You didn't have to do it. It goes on, the Medrash Rabbah goes on to say, Hashem shall shine his countenance on you, and he shall enlighten your eyes and heart through Torah, and he shall grant you children who are b'nei Torah. And it's all related to Torah. This idea of chayin and turning his face towards us is all related to Hashem talking to us through Torah. In the midst of Birkasa Kohanim, the Kohanim, in this middle bracha, are blessing us with this gift of understanding Kodesh Baruch Hu's Torah. That's like the center of the bracha. And Rav Schwab says that we're davening and we're getting blessed from the Kodesh Baruch Hu, from the Kohanim, that through Talmud Torah, our mind will kivyachol meet the mind of the Kodesh Baruch Hu. That we will begin to understand what a Kodesh Baruch Hu's will is, what our life is all about, what we're supposed to do on this earth, what Hashem's love for us is, develop our love for Kodesh Baruch Hu, our Yirah Shemayim, and all of that is really through the idea of Talmud Torah. And we're asking Kodesh Baruch Hu to shine towards us. When he turns away from us, we don't understand what he wants or what from us. We don't understand the relationship. We're asking him to shine his face on us and to give us a gift, the gift of Talmud Torah. And then to have children who will also learn Torah. But through learning Torah, we should absorb something of the Chachmah of the Kodesh Baruch Hu. The Chachmah is not just, quote-unquote, his knowledge, intellectual knowledge, as we said before. You can't make the Torah on that, on just intellectual understanding. But it's really deeply understanding Kodesh Baruch Hu. And the very last part of the bracha, V'yasa Hashem panav alecha, V'yisem lecha shalom. May Hashem turn his countenance, his face towards you, and establish peace for you. So Rav Schwab brings down that there are three levels of peace here. First is the inner peace of a person towards the Kadosh Baruch Hu, Bin Adam Lamakom. Second is the inner peace of man to man, peaceful relationship. There's the inner peace of man to himself, and peace from external enemies. Because wild animals, that was a problem then, really. Wild animals, enemies, natural, terrible forces in the world, like tornadoes and whatever, a famine, like it should protect us on a physical level. But deeper is to be absent of relationships that have machlokas. So it's an interesting progression that he brings. First is material, second is Torah, and third is relationships, peace. And of course, we're not going to go into detail now, so we'll get to it later, but that's right, that it says there's no vessel that can receive all bracha except shalom. That's the final vessel that we need, is shalom, to really be able to receive any other bracha in the world. I know that a lot of people went to the Yom Yun, kind of telling, and it was great. Wish I could have gone. They're probably a little bit, maybe over in like the 3 weeks. I don't know what if they all talked about. 3 weeks or different things. What? So I was just thinking that I wanted to do the last part of the shiur on a bigger topic.
Representing the
Shechina, right. Right. And they are the vessel to give bracha to us. They're like a channel. Mm-hmm. In this case, in theory, we're standing in front of the Kohanim in terms of the progression of the Beis Hamikdash, etc. But right now, we're talking about you're saying the bracha yourself. You're saying the psukim yourself in order to be Mekayim, Birkat HaTorah. Okay? No, I'm gonna move on because we're not dealing with the actual standing in front of the Kohanim, okay? We're dealing with the words of the. Okay, we're dealing with the words. Hello, Jimmy. We're dealing with the words of the Birkat Kohanim, and I'm not gonna make comment on what we're supposed to do there, but what I wanted to do was kind of weave together a little bit this idea of Birkat HaTorah, Birkat Kohanim, 3 weeks, which are all merged, as you know, together. As if we're dealing with Birkat HaTorah right now, and also interesting, I hope I can weave it back in, is we just finished, we did Korach and Pinchas, and there's a lot about the kahuna in there. So what I'd like to do is try to weave it together a little bit. I hope it doesn't come out too strong, but okay. Anyway, we learned last week, why did we lose the Beis HaMikdash? So one of the answers in the Gemara is that because no Birkat HaTorah was there, right? They brought down the Torah into an intellectual subject of learning. They were starting to learn it like it was anything else, and not the Torah revealing Dvar Hashem and Dveikos LaHashem. It was separate, beginning to separate from that. It wasn't looking at it as being the ultimate source of life, direction, attachment to Kodesh Baruch Hu, the meaning of our life. It was becoming an intellectual subject, a fascinating intellectual subject. Yet it also says in Gemara that we lost the base of Mikdash because of Sina Sinam, faithless hatred. Okay? It doesn't say faith, hatred. It says Sina Sinam. Sinam in this case is like without real reason, justification, or like we say sum. You know, just because. Now, it's because of this difficulty between individuals and Klal Yisrael that wasn't based on any real reason. It's the inability to see each other in Dan Lekatzus or whatever is necessary to respect and understand another. But somehow this is all, if Klal Yisrael and if Chazal tell us these different reasons, then there is an interrelationship between them also. And I'd like to try to link it together just a little bit. Every generation It says that every generation of the Beit HaMikdash wasn't built or isn't standing there. It says if it was destroyed in that generation. So in other words, there's still unresolved issues that we have. That the Beit HaMikdash would be standing there today if we had resolved these issues. Okay? I always found that very difficult to take. But that's the truth. Truth is hard to take. And these same themes are recurrent in us on some level. So we might ask, well, we say Birkas HaTorah, right? We make a bracha for Limud Torah every day, all of us, right? Or, you know, I can't say every Jew, but so there's two things. A, not every Jew is making a bracha on Limud Torah. The other is, for ourselves that do make a bracha, like Dvorah was saying, are we really making a bracha? Are we really having kavana for what Torah is? Or we're just making the bracha in order to be able to then deal with Torah through the day? So that's the question. Are you making a bracha that you have the opportunity to learn Torah in order to receive the love and the relationship and the Dvar Hashem? Or are you making your Kasa Torah for the intellectual ability, you know, to learn, sit and learn Torah? And like we said, it's the Dvar Hashem. It's the word of Hashem. It's His will. It's Lahavdil, His way of thinking, His communication with this world, His communication with each individual. It's the key to our relating to Kodesh Baruch Hu, to living according to His will, to maximizing our life in this world, to finding and fulfilling our tikkun in this world, as a klal and as an individual. It's the only way, really, to bring our neshama to its higher place. As we said, our neshama, in Elokai Neshama, our neshama is here, and it's tahor, and it's attached to Kodesh Baruch Hu. The question is, what are you going to do with it then? It's like you can have a child who's brilliant, and he can get nowhere because he's not developed himself, right? Or any skill in any way, an artist, a this, a that. But the most important thing is relationship to Kodesh Baruch Hu. We have it, Hashem gave it to us. It can never be severed. As we said, one out of those, Nefesh Chaim said one out of 10 or one out of 12 of those connections to Kodesh Baruch Hu for a Jew can never, ever be broken. But the question is, then what do you do with it? So the next bracha after the Elokai Neshama is Birkas HaTorah, because the Torah is the way for us to bring our neshama higher and higher, to develop that relationship, to build it, to strengthen it, to do our tikkun in this world. And it's the only way to bring Hashem's presence in this world, in our life, in Olam Haba, and in Olam Haza, and therefore in Olam Haba. So really, as Rav Pinchas really good at explaining that Torah is Hashem's love for us and our way of learning to love Him. And Torah is our total connection to Kodesh Baruch Hu. So do we have any, sometimes do I have these kavanas when I make the Kasa Torah? Mm-hmm. You know, do I think about this? Or am I also reducing Torah into this, like, well, it has to be done. You know, like, it has to be learned. But not really for what it really is, for what its depth of it really is. You know, did I push my husband to learn because he's supposed to learn or because he's developing a relationship with the Kaddish Baruch Hu, bringing Hashem's presence to the world, you know, dealing with the will of God? You know, what's he really doing when he's learning Torah? You know, what? You know, no, it's like learn Torah. But what is learning Torah? So, and do we inculcate ourselves, our children, our friends, you know, anybody around us, husbands, to learn without the understanding why or what or this or that? You know, is it a race of who can learn more hours, you know? Or is it really pursuit of connecting to Kaddish Baruch Hu? So that, I just wanted to bring that aspect out. And the interesting thing is in Birkas HaKohanim, the first bracha, as we said, Yivarechecha, is for material goods. The second bracha, Yer Hashem Panav Elecha, is for understanding Torah, to absorb this Chachma of Kaddish Baruch Hu, to build this relationship. And the third bracha is for peace, Yisa Hashem Panav Elecha. And here, the two, the learning and the peace, are exactly what we've been told by the Gemaras, are the reasons we don't have the Beit HaMikdash. And here they are right in Birkas HaKohanim. And of course, you know, just as I was thinking, they say that the material good that we have today, even though it's so incredible, is nothing compared to the time of the Beit HaMikdash. Mm-hmm. You know, the shefa and the produce and the trees and the all of Klaizra and the physical, you know, whatever, stones and this and that, whatever. Nothing compares to what was. An interesting place there. And I just want to add that, you know, it's just interesting in this idea of serving Hashem, and like learning to have this relationship with Kadosh Baruch Hu, through Torah. It's interesting because we finished a few weeks ago Korach. And what did Korach do? He felt that there was unequal, it was not, you know, he should have more responsibility in the kahuna, right? He had a lot. He had a beautiful job, beautiful responsibility, beautiful way of serving a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And he wanted more. Where was this coming from? Obviously, we know, ultimately it's ego, because Hashem proved it out, and he's somewhere in a pit going around, they say, right? Anyway, then we have Pinchas. It's really interesting. The first thing that I learned, Pinchas was the son of Kohen. He's a grandson of Aaron. Now, he was already he wasn't a Kohen, though. Why was this? I don't know if you know, but when Hashem determined who was a Kohen, Pinchas was, I guess, young or whatever. He was the only grandchild born yet. They went through the whole list of who will be the Kohanim. And when Akash Baruch Hu made this list, Pinchas was not a part of this list. But the list included children that would be born to Kohanim. So Pinchas, out of everybody in his family, was not a Kohen and not going to be a Kohen. Because of the list that Akash Baruch Hu made, it stopped at the generation after Aharon. Pinchas was the third generation, and he was not put into this list, although the list did include, but after that, children that were born to Kohanim. But he had already been born, so he was not going to be Kohen. Now here is someone who could have had the worst self-esteem, could have been angry and bitter, right? He's the only one in his family, his cousins, his brothers, his uncles, his grandfather. Everybody is a Kohen, except Pinchas. This is an incredible thing. And what did he do? He didn't have these issues, okay? How he didn't have them, I don't know, but he didn't have them. He went and he killed Kusi and Zimri with no hesitation, with shame, shemai, regardless of what the outcome or the result would be to him, right? Or to anything. He served Hashem with a total, complete selflessness. There's a person who had obvious, you know, love of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And here's Korach, right, who had incredible opportunities, you know, already responsibilities, already Kohen, and the huge ego couldn't take it. Okay, so the idea is, are we serving Hashem regardless of our background, who we were born to, what our situation is in life? It doesn't really matter. The point is that each person can develop this incredibly loving, deep relationship with Kadosh Baruch Hu. It doesn't matter where we come from. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so if we don't learn Torah Lishma, if we don't do that, then we lose this ultimate relationship. And we can easily treat Torah as an object, I guess, just as Korach treated the kahuna as an object for his needs. Okay, not that he wasn't great, you know, probably much greater than all of us sitting in this room. You know, that's great in many ways, but he had this one big failing. And then, Chas v'Shalom, what happens? Hashem becomes an object, right? If we don't treat Torah as really Dvar Hashem and really building a relationship with Kadosh Baruch Hu, finding out his will and serving him, then we make a Kadosh Baruch Hu into, like we talked about this many times, an object to serve us, a robot, an idol. That's what idol worship is. Like we talked about it in Megillas Esther, I think we talked about Megillas Esther, maybe. And it's like, it becomes a distant ideological concept at best, an idol at worst. You know, our robot, you know, I'm going to push some buttons and Hashem will do for me. And there's no two-way relationship. There's no, Hashem serves us, not the other way around. And there's no, like, there's none of this free flow between the Kadosh Baruch Hu and each individual, which is what he created, what he set up when he built our neshamas. And we've diminished or lost that relationship of Bein Adam L'Makom. If you go from there, I was thinking, what happens to the rest of our relationship? If we diminish a Kadosh Baruch Hu into Chas v'Shalom, an object, then we can also start to almost like squeeze or objectify our own selves, Ben Adam La'atzmo, and Ben Adam La... You know, we can easily fall into the trap of not recognizing our own real worth and value, because that comes from a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Really, it does. Without knowing Hashem, without knowing that Hashem created us with love, et cetera, et cetera. And then you don't see other people in the same way also. And it can either fall into ego or into despair. Like we talked about it over these last 4 or 5 months, whatever. And if, you know, if this, having, not having this as part of our consciousness anymore, Kadosh Baruch Hu, then, I mean, the worst case scenario is Amalek, who decides, like we said, in Megillas Esther, who decide what they want, how they want, and who they want, as being chashuv or not chashuv. It's their own determination and their own will to do whatever they want. There's no longer an objective reality in the world. I was thinking that, you know, we all try to do an enormous amount of mitzvot and things today. They talk about all the Torah institutions, all the chesed, and each one is beautiful, but do they really have the kavanas behind them? You know, are the things that we run to do we really need to run to do them? Or are we making the right decision? Like you said about, a little bit like your heart, you have a feeling for someone. What's the real MS in helping another human being, doing a chesed? You know, does it come from the need, your need to give, or does it come from the need that the person, that the person's need, what they have? Right. You know, you run out of the house to do a chesed, maybe your child needs 20 minutes of focused attention. We push our husband to do something because that's what the olam does, but maybe that's not what he needs. Or maybe that's going to cause shalom bias problems. You know, it's all a question. Are we having the right kavanas in all of our running and doing? That we run and run and run. But are we living with the concept of Torah, of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and of what's really inner, in our inner place? What's good for us internally? What's good for another human being that we're related to? Friends, whoever it is. Who said this?
Why? Because it's Avodat Hashem, the learning, the Torah, learning for the neighbor, for the internal, like what Prabhupada said, it's not just learning for the externity, the external, you know, another page of the Gemara, and that's it, a tacharut, whatever. It's learning for the day, it's learning in order to make a kiddush Hashem. That's what learning is for. It's Avodat Hashem. A Rav Usher was a tremendous big tummy chacham. He knew, I think, backwards and several times or what, and then suddenly Hashem took his chacham. Hashem took all of his knowledge from him to last forever. Yeah. And he had tremendous, he surrendered Hashem. I don't know how long. I think it's someone in his tummy book that heard it from him. And he had, I don't know how long it's going on, but he had tremendously surrendered. And he made a whole switch from the learning to Avodat Hashem.
It's pulling that, you know, why was Birk, you know, not saying Birkas HaTorah with the bracha? Is there the kavana of it in it? Is every, are the mitzvahs that we do, whether they're Ben Adam HaChaver or Ben Adam HaMakom, are they done with the thought of, I'm going to get a mitzvah, you know, check off on the other mitzvah? Like, we have lists of things we have to do for the day. You know, we check them off every day, like, we feel so good we accomplished them, right? But are we thinking, is this, you know, is this what needs to be done? What's my kavana behind it? It's a lot of work. It's a lot of self-meditation, self-thinking, checking with other people. It's, you know, it's, you know, did Koch check it out before he wanted more of the kahuna? You know? On the other hand, Koch didn't check it out, you know, like, either. But, you know, where is your kavana? Where is your, in the mitzvah? You know, are we thinking Jews as well as acting Jews? And today, it says everything's running. Running, running. What are they running for? The whole world is on a fast pace. You know, I spend a lot of time here, so my pace is very slow. Anything I do, it takes a long time. But I, you know, when we do go out and the world is rushing, everybody's rushing. And where are they rushing to? What are they rushing for? Of course you're supposed to acquire mitzvot and do, etc. But there's, you know, 50 years ago, 40 years ago, you know, we say the generations before were great. They weren't rushing, you know, in this way. And they're on a greater level than us, right? So it's not the rushing that's going to accomplish the growth of a person, but it's the combination of thinking, the kavana, and doing.
You have to read a little bit of your explanation. It was really courageous to take yourself out of the
very hard. Very hard.
Of course, sometimes they just put people they're giving out just to him, and like you don't take it. But there's other people around the same time. And I feel like I'm not taking it. Mm-hmm. But I think I now need to read this thing about this problem happening to me now.
Take an enormous amount of inner strength. Takes an enormous amount of inner strength and a work, and I think working with someone else to do it also. And it's interesting that really to love another person or oneself or Kodesh Baruch Hu requires really focused attention and inner work. For example, if you want to really understand another human being, the idea is that you have to, like anyone as a child or whatever, you have to move yourself out of the picture and receive what they have to say or watch them or whatever it is without preconceived notions. Pull in what they're trying to give over to you, and then you pull yourself back in and think about whatever. But it's really removing oneself, and it works with oneself, with a Kodesh Baruch Hu, with another human being. It really acquires, you know, letting go of your own ideas, your own thoughts, your own preconceived notions. Like a lot of people who work with children that are off the derech or difficult may say that you have to really get into them, what their situation is, where they're coming from, and that's like an extreme case. But it works all the way down to ourselves, to, a child that's, you know, doing perfectly well, to a relationship, into learning Torah. You know, a person has to, in learning Torah, has to really, you know, they're wiping their slate clean to receive the word Dvar Hashem, right? That's what they're really, they're trying to inculcate Torah and exculcate, I don't know what the word is, you know, the stuff and the whatever, and really bring in the Torah. Now, of course, you were given a personality, an individuality, etc., and then you could integrate the two, but there has to be like a time, whether it's a period, a short, you know, a short period of whatever, a temporary piece, that you remove yourself out of the picture and just pull in somebody else's advice or somebody else's problem or somebody else's actions, whatever it is, whether you do it with a child, whether you want to go for yourself for advice. You know, you have to remove yourself enough out of the picture to take in something else. This is really focused attention and to understand another.
Do you remember a little more what you're saying to yourself?
Like, that's what his photo dish really is. When you try to make yourself as empty, as clear as possible, to just almost allow yourself to, you know, we think, you know, we make ourselves into this, like, a little bit crazy, right? So it's almost like letting yourself go and hear what's deeper underneath. Maybe pain, maybe sorrow, maybe a need, maybe a fear. Maybe like you said, she said work on herself to know, I can't just grab the Tehillim and say these Tehillim. I need to work on this Midah. And even in working on this Midah, she may be working on the wrong Midah. Okay? If she asks someone else and makes herself blank and listens to a good friend, a mentor, a rav, you might tell her she has to work on a whole different Mita. Mm-hmm. Right? It's like, it's either working with yourself and working with another human being. Like we were talking last night, my husband, about ego. You know, ego is, we're talking about Korach, etc., and ego is one of the hardest things to get to, like, work with. And I think you really need, besides your own inner work of letting go, is someone to direct you. Mm-hmm. You know, where is your ego in the way? You know? That's a whole subject in and of itself. I think with ego, you're the champion by yourself. That's just what I think.
Example, right? Just an example.
Did you happen to be the one to tell you?
Yeah.
So he's already outside.
Yeah, you could be the one to tell your husband also. You have to know how to tell him, and he has to ask you. He has to ask you, or you have to know how to tell him. I haven't figured that out yet. But.
Emotional labor, you know, if you see a child sometimes, they say it's not the ultimate behavior of what they have. They're not looking to see what, you know, like this day, they're not looking to see. They're little older, you can see a kid's supposed to get go to school, and somebody else is a nice adult. You're about to get the
opposite.
Nice yeah, school bag. You're about to get a school bag, and somebody else has a different one, a nice one, okay? So mine's no good of it, right? They don't even see what they have. Why? Because they're looking for things. Families, we're very full of our own ego. We can't absorb. I don't know if it's not the kind of thing. You know what I'm saying?
It is the movie. That's bringing the child to because
we all compare ourselves to other people. If we wouldn't compare ourselves to other people, maybe we know more what we're supposed to be doing.
Yeah, well, we're looking at
so
something
else.
Yeah,
yeah.
It is a good muscle because that's what people are out in the world doing a lot of times, keeping up with
we're
the Joneses.
We're looking at something else, and when we're not able to be still, we have to
do
have
to right. That's why sometimes this bracketing, this separating yourself from the world, thinking, what do I really need? You know, I'm running, let's say. Why am I running? Because I'm scared of something. Like, being in the present sometimes enables you to get in touch with that fear or anger or whatever it is. It's like a moment. And that's one thing. And then there's listening to another human being. And there's trying, you know.
Okay, yeah? It's so much of your work that you do, it's actually like we're focused on what other people have, so we have this illusion that something like that is important. And the illusion surrounds us on the edge. You know, and as we're comfortable and we're very protected by these illusions.
Something
and for a long time the egg is wonderful because it's secure and you don't think about anything. It's like you have the refrigerator and your kitchen cabinet. You know, it's like the whole world is what we're doing now. You have to get the right school bag. Or, you know, these illusions of what we're running after. It's like an eggshell. And at some point it becomes confining. And uncomfortable. It can't move.
It can't grow.
And then you have to back it. And then that egg has to be shattered. And that's what's got. The ego is that wonderful set of concepts that we have about ourselves that make us feel safe and secure against what we can't see because we're really enclosed to it. And there's this sequence of feeling safe and then feeling confined and then having to break it, which is to break oneself, and then to be out of panic. I mean, flat out, wet, ugly, uncomfortable, I don't know what I'm doing in this world. Keep the camera away. I'm so awful. But that's what we need to do. And in another way, we draw all kinds of stuff up and we have a new kind of existence that we can start doing what we're supposed to do.
One thing I think
is that we get confined again.
There's a real blessing in not having success and suffering to be
there's both. You have to go back to that idea that we said in Mitzvot HaBitachon. You have to have both. You live a life of Yonos, you can come out a very broken, shattered, insecure person. Mm-hmm. You have a life, you know, that Kosh Baruch is set up anyway. You're going to get both. And it's really pulling in from both places. Mm-hmm. You have to build, and sometimes you have to break. Remember, Rev, who is it that he's a psychologist in America? He's Frisky. So he said that he went on this medical conference. He was a young, new doctor. And he went to this medical conference. And he had a very bad back. He worked very huge hours, crazy hours in a mental hospital. And he was exhausted. That's this big conference. And they had there, it was like a health club, I think in Nevada or whatever. I don't know, one of these places in Arizona. And they told him that there are these special jacuzzi, spas, whatever. You sit in the water for X amount of time, half an hour, whatever. It'll really help your muscles in your back. And you have to do it once a day or twice a day. He said, okay, I'll try it. I got in there and said, you could not. And so I kept looking at the watch, the clock. You know, okay, 2 minutes are up, 3 minutes are up. You know, I was until the lift, think about the lift. I got to get out of here. 7 minutes, I'm out of here. And they said, look, it doesn't help for 7 minutes. I said, he says, I just can't take it. He gets up, he goes out, the next day he comes back. Okay, got to 9 minutes, whatever. This is not helping you. And then it hit him that he can't be alone. He can't sit there alone and just relax. And he said, I can't, there's something in myself I can't face. And I have to face it. And that's when he started to do all this internal work and to re-look at what he's afraid of or what he's missing or his self-confidence level. He said, I'll do this with self-confidence. And this is, you know, something that he had to build, be able to be with himself. He had to believe he was worthy of sitting in this beautiful jacuzzi and working, getting his back up to good health for half an hour and be able to sit with himself and just be with himself. So it's like a combination. That combination of inner looking and as we said, you know, before, it's listening to another human being, listening to Kadosh Baruch Hu, learning Torah with this opening of what is Hashem saying to me, listening to myself, whatever it is, it requires this time of focused attention, kavana. It could be a moment of thinking before I do a mitzvah, before I'm about to embark on something.
Maybe after step like that, when you learn something, just see what you can do from it. Maybe that's
not also. Maybe part of that goes with it also, yeah. Sure. Anyway, so that this brings us more to the idea of sinas klinum. Like, what's the opposite of this? And I can't say fully understand it, but Chazal say it's looking at another superficially. In other words, defending them,
the
I mean, defining
what
them. So we talked about what's the real way of giving love? Giving someone focused attention, removing your thoughts, your being, and looking really deep inside them. Like, let's say you have a 14-year-old son. You know, do you sit there and listen to him talk? Give him, remove your desire, your need for him to be X, Y, or Z, your ideological preconception, and do you look at him and listen to him and give him your full attention, right? And think, what does he need? Not what do I need him to be. What does he need? It works with anybody. It works with a friend. Works with a stranger, works with your husband, works with, you know, anybody in the world. It's that moment of letting, a moment of letting go, and letting them be like the center. Doesn't mean you let go of who you are and you're, you know, but you let a moment of them come into you, and then you let go. Then you start to integrate it back into you and answer them, whatever. But that's it. Then you're able to pull in another person's, whatever it is, need or understanding of them or whatever it is. Sinas klinim is really, Chazal says, looking at someone superficially and making judgment on them for superficial things, right? That's what the baseless is. There's no real deep reason for hating them, not liking them. And I think if you take it farther, it's the inability to look at someone as a separate, God-created human being. Different than you, and yet, as we know, unique, no less or greater than you. They have their root in this world just like you do. They were created, like we said, in Elokai Neshama. They have that connection to Kadosh Baruch Hu just as much as you have that connection to Kadosh Baruch Hu. And they're equal to you in that way, and they're unique from you as well, because the Kadosh Baruch Hu made them unique. You know, no fingerprints the same, no face the same. You know, I remember I had twins for 4 years in my class, and it took me 4 years to get to know them apart. I could tell on the test immediately who was going
to
be who, because I knew which one. I didn't know the name. But I'd always, at the end, I'd be like, so, help me, you know, get his, their sister, grandmother, and mother could tell them apart. By the end, it started. Right, internal and eternal. That's beautiful.
Internal
and eternal.
And the Shama, what were we talking about back? Because the Shama,
made them, kissed them. And you could extend that out beyond client's realm in a little bit different way. But they're still a human being created by a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Right? And a goy is still created by a Kadosh Baruch Hu. You still have to look at them with a certain level of appreciation, I'm not. I'm not talking about. It's just appreciation that they are creation. You know, anything that a Kadosh Baruch created must be appreciated. But in terms of Klal Yisrael, they are equal and unique to you. And the idea is that it's really one neshama, right? That's what a Kadosh Baruch created, one neshama, scattered into 600,000 root neshamos, and then further broken down through the centuries. But it's really all one, all interconnected. And if we could degrade them or diminish them because of some external kitsonius issues, then we're diminishing a Kadosh Baruch Hu's relationship and love for each neshama. We are degrading Kadosh Baruch Hu by doing that. And if they're not like us, and we hate or criticize them, then we're degrading Kadosh Baruch Hu's creation of their uniqueness, their separateness, their individuality, their particular tikkun in this world. I was thinking the other day, there's a woman that I shouldn't take this part, I'll tell you afterwards, okay? Anyway, it says basically that we should be blessed by the Kohanim in all three parts of the bracha, that we should have material and physical well-being, that we should receive from a Kadosh Baruch Hu the understanding of Torah and really live to do the will of Kadosh Baruch Hu and have this relationship with Hashem, the second part of the bracha. It says, interestingly, Ki Mitzion Teitzei Torah, Dvar Hashem Yir Yishalayim. Dvar Hashem is right after Teitzei Torah, right? Ki Mitzion, we're here in Yerushalayim. We're waiting for the word of Hashem, the Shekhinah, to come back, really, really, fully come back to Yerushalayim. And Dvar Hashem Yir Yishalayim, right? Teitzei Torah, Mitzion, Dvar Hashem Yir Yishalayim. That's like the second part of the bracha, right? That's what we're waiting for. And the last is that we should have peace, which will bring us, if we really focus this Dvar Hashem, then we can bring in this peace to ourselves, our inner relationships, to Klal Yisrael, then all to the world. And I said, Baruch should bless us to help us get there.